half dying, but I intend to do it. That, yeah, that's why I didn't notice that it was under my name, I guess, because I didn't attempt to try to watch it and not find it.
Okay, so yeah. Maybe let's. Well, I would just recap a little of it. Last week, we had, you know, we have algebraic, so we have a, you know, a math, like, kind of network type of thing, and with algebra type of thing here, you know, any type of algebra here, and categories here, and then topological invariants. So the first row in that thing, like with the minimum structure, I mean the least structure you can do to produce some sort of topological invariant, is you start with, for example, you start with a graded algebra, phi algebra, and you get a graded category, which is, you know, short for graded tensor category. And then we get some sort of invariant. Given one category and you pick an object, you get one invariant for a braid.
So I imagine you last time you explained what braided means. Do you think you could
find tensor category?
Yeah, I actually did at the last 2 minutes, but I will do it again.
Okay.
But we did not define what graded by algebra. So we, at the end, like at the corner, there, I did define it, but it's okay. I'll do it again because I also want to see the parallel in the definitions. So today we won't quite get to here because, like, well, there's some work defining more precise void invariants, and it involves a bunch of definitions. So let's we postpone it until next time. So today we're basically concentrating on this part, this somewhat a correspondent under some conditions. But mostly given this, you always get this, but you know, you get something graded. Okay, let me start with some couple definitions. So a priori, it might seem disconnected. I'll define this object and this object, it might seem disconnected. I will use a theorem. When we add additional structure, we always keep what we had before, which is the bi-algebra structure. Say H comes with a multiplication, a unit, a co-multiplication, co-unit, and also something called a universal R matrix. So I'll write down more. So I won't write these out again, but you remember the unit multiplication has to be associative, co-unit has to be one. You know what I'm saying? Unit is unital. Okay, there's this commutative diagram that you need to satisfy, and these are the, you can satisfy the opposite things with opposite arrows. And these two types of algebra structure and the co-algebra structure are compatible. So this is by algebra. And now let's spend most of our time looking at forming the part that's different is the R. What is R? So this is universal R matrix. This is an element inside H tensor H. Okay, such that, so this is actually an algebra element, a special element such that R is invertible. There's this condition. I have to explain what this symbol means. But so if you apply R inverse first, which is an element also in H tensor H, right? And then this is something in H tensor H also because the delta plays something for R x in H.
So this is using the product, the mu product on the tensor.
You're taking a product. This is on the mu, the tensor.
New tensor mu.
Yeah. Yeah, new tensor. There's a switching, swapping at some point. So you have one element like in the tensor H1, H2, and the H1, H2. You first swap these two and then multiply
yeah.
those two together.
I also have a question. The R, is it really H tensor H or is H tensor H dual or something?
H tensor H.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So how do you define invertibility in this case?
H tensor H has an algebra structure that like we were talking about this new the multiplication comes from. So you put multiply the first two multiplies. And so that you have an algebra structure so you know what inverse means. And so this together you get now a new element in H, tensor H. And this thing is just basically applying this and then switching the two components. Switch the two tensor factors that's opposite, stands for opposite. So it's a coproduct that adds and followed by switch.
Sorry, that's not a definition of delta. That's a
This is the condition. This
a condition that R has to satisfy.
Yeah. Maybe I should say delta of X when X is tau. This is a split. I'm not sure if I talked about it before. H means switching two copies of H. Composed by this usual product. Applied to H. And this not goes from H tensor H to H tensor H, just switching the tensor factors. Not to get a bit too much stress right there. These are all kind of aside. Now, I haven't finished the definition for universal braided. I guess there's name universal R matrix. Except that I think even with just these two conditions, you are qualified to call it universal R matrix. So this terminology, but what I'm talking about braided algebra, so of course the universal R matrix refers to this unique part. But so these two conditions together is enough to allow you to call it a universal R matrix. But for it to give you a braided algebra, you need to satisfy two additional constraints.
Sorry, what did you say about unique R? R is, can there be more than one R?
It could be, but it comes with the data. Like you have a special R.
Yeah, right, okay.
And when you say the universal R matrix for braided by algebra, it means this R that comes with the braided.
Right.
So, you'll see before the end of today what this means. So all these conditions seem a little artificial a priori, but it will seem, either more natural or better motivated when you look at category modules. A lot of indices, and I will explain what these indices mean. So another aside. So for example, R, I can write R as, it's not a unique decomposition, but I can, because R is an element of H tensor H, so it would be like some finite sum of these things. Then you sum over R. But what does R13 mean, for example? So R13, let's say it's something in H tensor H, so three-fold tensor product. Because everything here is in H tensor raised to the power tensor power 3. So just for any tensor, for R, ij living in some tensor power, n-fold tensor product. So R13, this is just in this example, I think you can easily extend to it. Will be taking the identity in the middle and specifying kind of like the first copy of R acts on the first slot, and then the second copy of R acts on the second slot, and anywhere does not cover, we stay in the identity. So this is another aside, like what these things mean. So here is the definition of break. Let me now review what a break tensor category is. Review, or maybe last time was too fast. Do you already know some tensor category three? We'll see how far. So I'll specify the amount of data that comes with it. So you have a category, and you have a function, like this is called tensor product. It's basically a function from C cross C to C. I mean, or you know, you can use your usual tensor product. Like you just make it mimic your usual, but you have no which ones are the X. So and then you have a group unit, which means that for any object in C, you do I tensor that object, it's isomorphic to that object, like any object, like say B. Because I tensor V is isomorphic to B, and also I V tensor I is isomorphic to B. So there's such an object, such a unit. And you have this associative constraint, which will tell you how to rebracket things. This left constraint, which is the isomorphism I was talking about earlier, like I tensor V, this isomorphism to V, it was specified. And so it's specified isomorphism. This is the opposite, the multiplication on the right by I. And this one is the braiding. So this is a part. This is braiding, so this will be the part that we'll focus a bit more on. So,
and it's a little C, is that it?
Little C. It's a big C, little C. So, kind of in a little bit in parallel to that, I will say, so we're supposed to be, you know, more or less, we know more or less, you know, what a tensor category is. So I demand this part to be a tensor category, and we'll pay more attention. So C is a natural isomorphism. So C is a natural isomorphism. Between kind of like I have to specify two functions. Between two functions is the natural isomorphism. And you know, it's indexed by a pair of things in C, a pair of objects in C. The function is that you take two objects, you tensor them this way, and the second function is you tensor them the opposite way. And so on, you know, and when you get two morphisms, one way is you tensor them in order, and the other way you tensor them with opposite. And I introduced this shorthand notation last time. Like, it just means that for any object, for any morphism going between the corresponding spaces, this diagram can be H, which means the naturality of C, B, W. And when you this is when you have this natural isomorphism between these two switching functors, then C is called a commutativity constraint. So this is called the associativity constraint, this is called the left constraint, this is called the right constraint. This before it satisfies more conditions, this is called the commutativity constraint. Right now, it's like we're stopping here for us. I mean, then we'll add two more conditions, and there are two. And I will be done with the definition of it. So this is isomorphic, and that's not enough. But we need them to satisfy, and need the standard to satisfy this thing. So which is the exponent?
Sorry to interrupt you. So in the previous the condition where you stopped at, it was delta op is equal to r, and then it's delta. It's not delta op, right?
Yeah, it's a delta, and this is delta op. Okay. So r relates between these two.
So you had said it's more of a condition, but it does work as a definition also at this point, because you have delta op, which is defined.
No, the delta op is already defined. You can think of it as already defined.
Okay.
You always, when you have a coalgebra, you always have a opposite coalgebra. That gives an algebra structure, different algebra structure.
Right.
So, algebra structure. And this is already defined. I just haven't talked about it before, but just as a quick definition, you can imagine a little bit. And this is really a condition that such an element exists that relates between these two algebra structures. Let me draw this hexagon. Maybe some of you already know. Okay. I use some shorthand notation, but let's see. Just so our final goal is to get to this thing. Basically, if you look at, you kind of look at VW is here and VW is here. Basically, you kind of switch the U onto. So what different ways can you do this? So first, maybe we can, because VW, you want to move the ball to the front, maybe you can try to rebracket it so that the VW is working. And doing this, basically we're applying A, right? This is different. I mean A with the appropriate subscript, if you like. But basically, I'll just write A. And then now,
That's the standard A.
It's a standard A, yeah. But the subscript just means that usually you pick out a particular morphism, like a category,
write down
subscript. That's just because, like sometimes, well, usually you can always figure it out. But you're not lazy, like. So, and now so what else do we need to do? We want to move the VU to the other side. So now we can use the commutativity constraint. So I mean, if you're not lazy, you would say u comma v times w, right? So now you. So you switch these two, and now you get back here by rebracketing again. So you apply this system to the constraint.
But this time it's A first.
It's again moving.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Here, now since we were rebracketed, another way to go about it is to first move you one by one instead of two at a time. I just have to do two at a time. So one by one, I go to v tensor u bracket tensor w this by c tensor identity with the appropriate subscript. Okay, and then now I guess I'm supposed to. I want to move u again to the right side of the w, but before we can do that, we have to rebracket. So, u tensor w, and that's using your a. And then now I'll use identity tensor. C. And we have a similar, this let's call it h1, the first hexagon. And we have an h2. So let me just maybe put it right here. So they can look more different, but so this has a hold for any, for all the objects UVW in object of C. I drew on that. Okay. So the h2 refer to if you take the inverse here instead of c. So not only c has to satisfy this c inverse, c is natural isomorphism, so like it has an inverse. So if you stick in CRS, this has a module. So this is the, what I think is the easiest way to remember all hexagons. This is the, you sometimes will reindex everything and look at the commuting square from the other side. Though.
So,
right. Oh, I will.
So if you do C inverse, aren't your arrows all going in the other way?
No. So by definition, C inverse this way, but you just have an isomorphism. And you just so often what people do is reverse all the arrows and take this to be that one to be C.
Ah, I see.
And this one to be A inverse and C, and you know. But since the C is a new thing and A very new, I just want to say the condition holds for both C and C inverse. Okay. Just, I prefer to do it this way. Now, let's quickly define what a strict category is, strict tensor category is. I mean, we don't particularly need it this time, but we're dealing with mostly strict things right now because we actually can evaluate. But let me just write down the definition. So in the future, if I refer to something new strict. So a graded tensor also has an easier form, a nice form. It also gives you something, leads you to something more friendly. This has about conditions with categories. So now let's say, okay. Well, since I was just talking about braided tensor categories, but actually, the tensor category is the key. The strict tensor category, well, strict has nothing to do with braiding. Doesn't require C to be anything. So tensor category, sometimes I still write it. A braided tensor category. A tensor category is strict. If all these associativity constraint, left constraint, and R constraint are identity. So it would mean that, so say that these natural isomorphisms are identity, basically, you know, usually A, for example, A goes between U tensor V bracket tensor W to U tensor V tensor W. So by saying that this is identity, these two spaces a priori has to be identified. They have to be the same space in your category. So somehow, you know, maybe possibly after modeling out, or just say, you know, somehow in the category you're concerned with, they have to be the same object. And then you talk about this identity of the identity of the morphism for this object. Okay, so this has to be beautiful strict. Now, in the strict tensor category, I want to rewrite the hexagon conditions. So H1 will look like this. Now, because all the A's are identity, so we can kind of take them out of the picture. So the composition on the left would be just H1 is without inverse. So just C. And C, the C appropriate index is U, comma, V tensor W. Right? Because that's where I'm switching those two spaces. And on the right hand side, we get two C's. One, I guess also the first one is C tensor identity. In this are U, V. And then the second C is, so we have identity tensors. So because the A is identity, so we cannot, in this composition. C is the U, W. So that's one equation. Then we have H2. Then you just let A equals identity, and then just write it out. Mm-hmm. things. But they're not really that important. They're consistent. Okay.
Minus one, right?
Then
actually it's reversing arrows.
No, I have to reverse the arrows.
Oh, okay.
So because both A and A inverse are identical, so
yeah.
Okay. So you get these two things. I'm sorry about this one I did not keep with my convention, but that's just for remembering. This maybe this one works well if I go this kind of the other way. Okay, now you'll see what if you take these two together, you can take U equals U equals W. So maybe I'm just saying I'm getting into the Young-Baxter equation. And C equals C V D, so I no longer need to write this. Then you will get this identity versus C tensor identity, V, composed point the other way. So, okay. Identity tensor C. C tensor identity is the same as this one, this vector, and then identity tensor.
Sorry, that's confusing. Can you write out the second line?
Letter writing. So, how do you see that? I want to draw pictures, but I don't know. Can you? So basically, these two is here, and this two, this part is that, and that part is this, and then you follow by something else and get what you want. But let me represent pictorial.
I'm confused by still by this.
Which one?
But so somewhere, so if you take U equals V equals W, right, you're going to have two types of C's. One C which acts on three things at once, and one C which acts on two things at once. But I don't see that right now.
No,
I think
so these are all this acting on two things at once. All the C's are V, which means goes between V tensor V to V tensor V.
So how do you get this equation out of the previous H1 and H2?
So I was trying to explain.
Okay.
Yeah. So I want to say pictorially what these things represent. I mean, maybe the thing is, I'm debating because for now you kind of have to use your, I didn't establish the very concrete link between them, but let me just suggest it. If it's too confusing, maybe ignore it. So we can think of this as this thing is first a crossing composed with the identity here, composed with identity tensor crossing. So that's what this thing is. It's represented in a pictorial way. I mean, later maybe it will be more rigorous for these things, how to use these diagrams systematically. But right now, let's draw the second one using the same idea, say where C represents a crossing. So I start with a crossing here, and then identity here, and then I compose with an identity here and a crossing here. Okay, so you see, one is one stretch of opinion. You just look at the picture. And I'll say what the left hand side and the right hand side are here. On the left hand side, this part is the same as that, the first picture. So then I compose with this additional crossing on the first two strands and then identity on the third one. So this is what it is, right? And then I will draw the right hand side. The last two thing is this picture. Okay, so I'll start with that. And then I compose with on the top with the C on the second and third strand. And that is. So like any of you doing topology, then you see like for braids, these two are equal. I was not telling you this again. So just a visualizing, you see because the graded tensor category. It has some nice topological properties that satisfy these. Well, that's not the other way around. But anyway, Maybe I don't know, you can throw algebra. But that's just how you can put that. But maybe I shouldn't use an algebra something because I just want to relate to this Young Baxter equation.
So I guess maybe what I'm wondering is how one would go ahead to do the algebra.
Okay.
Because, so using the first, so suppose one starts with the two end ones, right? We can, using the H1 or H2, we can write it in terms of Cu, comma, CV, comma VV, and then we also multiply by something else. So and then we multiply it by something else. So how would one go ahead to transfer it? Transfer a CV, comma VV to a CVV, comma V. So using the above H1 and H2 to prove this, because I imagine that's how it's done.
Yeah, so I'm thinking probably using that, I'm thinking maybe you can use naturality. So the naturality is supposed to mean, so maybe you can stick in, be careful what F and G are, and if I just say use that. So because below it will be C, V, comma, V, tensor V, and the top will be C, V, tensor V, comma, V. The words in between, we need to be careful.
I see, okay, I get it. So you use naturality to relate H1 and H2.
Yeah, I didn't write out that. We play with these things. There should be.
Okay. No, I was just wondering how you pass from H1 to H2 in this naturality, which is the key.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, and then, So, anyway, I'm not sure, I didn't prove the whole thing, but hopefully that will work. So, Young Baxter equation is, kind of central to,
is naturality, is it possible to write naturality in this braided form as an equation?
Braided?
Like, as a diagram, as a braided diagram, saying two braid diagrams are the same.
Yeah, I think there's some diagrammatic way to do it, so maybe something like this kind of picture. Maybe two functions, maybe f and g, come in. Maybe the braiding is supposed to be the same as braiding first, and do some. You do braiding first, and do that's the same as doing g on this side and on this side, kind of. So you can do proofs by drawing diagrams. Let's see. Now, I have a better vision to talk about Young Baxter. Since it would be an important thing because it's the same, this thing is the same as one of the relations the great group satisfied. And also, physics maybe comes up next time, difference and so on. But in general, Young Baxter equation, you can do it for C kind of in the automorphism, like vector space automorphism of V tensor V. So this one is, you get this, this is a chance. So, but if you take this kind of workload out of context and you introduce separately, then what you want is that C is an automorphism between V tensor V to V tensor V, from V tensor V to V tensor V. And these sort of call Young Baxter equation. And in this case, it's satisfied. So it's also an introduction to Young Baxter equation. And so you can say this C, V, comma V, pick an object, the braiding for that object is satisfied by Young Baxter equation. So you can see maybe hinting to how you get an invariant of braids. And because you have a braided tensor category, and you pick an object P, and you come with this grading, and this grading will, in the future, will be mapped to, or rather, the classroom will map to the C. So let me talk about an example of, just write down what is supposed to be an example of graded as a category. And this is actually a pretty trivial example. But I want to write it down because it's a pretty, like, a relatively canonical example that we use. So just K vector spaces. So these are what you're familiar with, your intuition of tensor product and mechanics. Graded. The break category is different, but so let me just say. It comes with, so remember the data are, so this category is something I will denote by vec C. Basically, vector spaces over K. And tensor product is our neutral tensor product, and the identity, the unit is K, the scalar field K. Okay, and there's a bunch of identities. So the A, L, and R are all identities. So this is a straight category. And lastly, this grading will be given by tau, the simplest which is the tool. Let's just write down what you know. What is this? Because I will need the next theorem that they kind of building on this. Actually, so I was going to say, like, strictly speaking, it's after some identification. So because the U tensor V bracket tensor W are supposed to be already identified with the other one. So I may be abusing notation. Usually this may be means before identification, but I will not make that distinction so much. So this is the usual. Okay. So K is a round field. Okay, maybe it's not this special. But the next few things, so let me write out what is A. Like what it means for them to be identity. So if you go between the vector space U tensor V bracket tensor W, then you just re-bracket it without doing anything to them. So and these two things are already identified. You can imagine they're identified, so they didn't do anything. Just re-bracketing. I do not write this, but basically it's a V, W, W, V. An L of one tensor in the vector space is identified with this thing. Identified with one tensor V and also identified V tensor 1. And so this in the sense R is C, but I'm just going to put in this. Maybe I can put them all in. So it's tau V tensor W. W tensor V. So simply switching without doing anything. That's not identity, but it's a nice noise. So now my claim is that it's a graded tensor category, so just write out what you need to check. It's a pretty easy to check. But I will write them out. So A, L, R, and C, they are all natural isomorphisms. I guess, which means they commute with any linear maps. It's commute to their and they're mostly identities, so they're going to be okay. Tau is okay. Commute with switching for time. And E satisfied. Just remind you, like, what's involved here. A is the associativity constraint. It satisfies the Pentagon axiom. is which relates two different ways of rebracketing four component expression. L, R, and A, together with A, satisfy the triangle axiom. And C, and together with A, satisfy H1 and H2. But these are, you can do at home or in the classroom. Now let's do right down the theorem, which build on these things. Or actually, there's not a structure or anything. Let me try to put module structures. I already did once before, but I need to remind you. This one example of a module structure on spaces. There's something called a tensor A module structure, and one's called a trivial A module structure. I'll use them. So let's see. Why do I want to do it? So now I have vector spaces, the category vector space, and I have these associative constraints and stuff. But I want to say that I'm looking at the category A module, where it is an algebra, and I want to say that it's, the theorem will have a claim about it being a subcategory of vector space, okay? Which means it has the same associative constraint, L and R, null identity. But what's not given, so you have a tensor product for vector space U tensor V. You know the vector space structure on U tensor V, but you don't know the A module structure on U tensor V. So let me fix that. I want to be able to say what A module structure on U tensor V, and also what's the A module structure of K, like the units I can take inside the A module thing. So let A be an algebra. I read it like a coproduct, but actually it's not really co-associative, it's just an algebra. And sometimes we just want something small. Oh, what was the co-modification? Co means that it's not yet co-associative. And there's a co-unit, A to K. Also algebra modism. And that's the only condition I have on them. And I'll call this a co-unit or quote. And using these two maps, we can kind of define structures on U tensor V and K respectively. So I'll use this to define the A module structure on U tensor V. So let me just write down the definition first. So this is in U tensor V, and this is in A tensor A, and you let it act on, you kind of let each component act on these. So we talked about this before, and we call this like tensor A module structure. That's when you have a real co-unit and co-multiplication, but you don't need them to be real yet. To define this, you only need them to be algebra modisms. So I also put quote here, that just means that he might not give you one, I just put quote because those are quote. Okay, and then using epsilon, we define a module structure on the K. I want to write less, but I don't want to omit information. So here, U and V are A modules. And here K, the ground, defined on K. So you can find out lambda of fx scalar. You do this just epsilon a multiplied by lambda. So we did this. So just one line justification for why they can give you a larger structure. So like, you know, we remember if you let B add of A add of first and then B, then you get epsilon B multiplied by epsilon A and lambda, and because this algorithm is epsilon B A. And also the same reason for identity here would give you epsilon 1 is 1. So precisely because they are algorithms, we get structures on this. I will always assume that when I write down a module, like U and V are modules, and when I write down U tensor V, I will assume this structure.
There's kind of another obvious candidate for a tensor A module structure, which is A acting on U tensor V would be A U tensor A V. A tensor A doesn't necessarily satisfy the conditions for delta, right?
Say again? So the question is this an algebra morphism? Like your question has to do with, is this an algebra morphism in your algebra? And sometimes it is, sometimes isn't. If it
right.
isn't, then this will not be a module structure. So it relies on, what it relies on is that, so U tensor, with U and V are A modules, and U tensor V has a natural A tensor A module structure, and then you do this pull, you use this to pull the module structure back onto A, because this is an algebra morphism between these, so you pull back the module structure onto
right.
A module. But in general, you cannot do that. They will not satisfy the axioms. Precisely because this is not an algebra.
It won't satisfy the Marshall axioms.
Precisely because it's not an algebra. So that was, you know, that's.
Okay.
So now let me write down this theorem, which I was kind of alluding to. And maybe there wasn't enough time to do it. At least I'll write it down. I want to go over. I was going to do this. So basically, this is an axiom relating by algebras, and you know what characteristic is a module has, right? So even A is a by algebra, cannot even only if A is a tensor subcategory. Category of vector K. And you see why I define those things, because I want K to be inside a subcategory and I want its product to be inside. But there are further conditions to check. This is just my shorthand notation, that's a graded condition. I have to write down the so A dot epsilon. Let A be the algebra. With fold multiplication work. And for the next, as a so we're going to assume it's algebra. Now,
that's different from saying it's a bi-algebra.
It's a different from, yeah, because this in quote means that they're not coexistent. This means not a unit.
Oh, I see.
This does not satisfy those computer
types
that I drew earlier. So, they're only merely algebra ones. So, now, what makes them into a bi-algebra? A comma, so, delta and epsilon is my algebra. Even only if the category of A module is a tensor set category. Okay, the X set. But we. I always get information. Okay, the category A module is a tensor subcategory. And maybe since I said it already there, maybe let me just already write the different phrasing of this. So IE is a tensor category with A and L and R all being identity. We have this natural isomorphism and then we can take this one space. The second one, like further elaboration of this, let me look at the next thing. So you have a graded by algebra. So the sum R, which I haven't specified here. So the sum R is a graded by algebra, which then only if, I mean, maybe you can guess what do you think will be on the right side.
Graded
and
some category.
But that's it, won't be a sub. No, it won't be a break, like we'll have the same grading, but we'll have the same things, but it will have gradings. It will have a grading, but it might not, it's not the same, might not be the same as the tau there. So that's my. So, but yeah, pretty much this will be a grading category. So. So what this grading will be will depend on the R here. So it will go both ways and depend on the R. And but this but the harder the A and L and stuff, they're still at it. Well obviously came from there. You just have to find a grading that fits those. So let's prove this next. Okay. You want questions? Maybe like you want to get a little bit of, you know, why might that happen, like speculate, even at a level of speculation, because I don't think I have time to look at this. But maybe just, if you want to speculate of why these things and how they change.
Well, I mean, I would think that it's a matter of kind of pulling back instead of pushing forward the grading on A to the grading on the modules, right?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, so we will, I mean, basically it boils down to, well, you're talking about this part, you know, you assume this part is done. I mean, this requires a little bit of proof.
You don't have to do anything. That's,
no, you do.
You don't have to construct anything, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's all just checking stuff, right?
Yes, yes. Kind of, yeah.
Second one, you have to construct the grading.
And R was C,
right.
And C was R, and the relation will be basically R composed with some switching. And I guess in that sense, like you look at this as kind of short, a notional short expression. But you know, you could end up comparing these two, like the top two and the bottom two expressions, the hexagons, and you will see the tau will make some. I mean, there's some indices. They're labeled kind of different. But they behave kind of the same as everything. So maybe one thing that you know that I didn't understand earlier, which why I knew this correspondence, was, for example, how you like to label. So the elements in the R 1-3 and 2-3 that you're labeling, always when you look at strands like this, always one always acts on the first one, second always acts on the third one. But at the level of vector spaces, they can see U, V, W, they get switched, right? So this will be labeled like U and this W instead of 2, 3, maybe, you know what I mean? So what is labeled like this? So when you have strands, you have maybe more than one way writing things down. One natural way is to say which position it's in, like, you know, the first, second, or third strand. Another thing is you start from the base and say, you know, you label them A, B, C, and then say you label by the color of the strand. So there are two labelings, and basically this will be the part, like the definition of C from R and R from C will get to that mislabeling. point of understanding my fuzzle. Okay.